I have no idea what this is about, but this is the news, according to me. Well, good morning. Maybe I should say, this is the news, according to me. I don't know. This is, we are here. It is Wednesday, September 4th, 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, I believe. I think it is. It's 7 a.m. I guess it's 7 a.m. Central Time. I did not realize my computer is has switched times because I connected it to my phone. I'm using my phone as a hotspot this morning. For those of you who didn't have got the privilege of listening to the live broadcast last week, this is the first show I've had since last. Did I have a show on Friday? I think I had a show on Thursday. I did not have a show on Friday. Long weekend with the holiday weekend, and I was in Chicago over the weekend. We did Bike the Drive. We sailed the boat over to, by the way, it's 2024 if I didn't mention that. We took the boat, sailed the boat over to Chicago. Did Bike the Drive. That was it was a good day for that. It was rather windy on the way back towards the north, but it was a very, very good day for a 30-mile bike ride. We ended up riding about 45 miles probably by the end of the day because we have to ride to the bike thing and then you have to ride the bike thing and then you have to ride. The whole family went to rode over to a place to go for breakfast, and then we had to ride back to the boat. So it was a lot of riding on the bicycle. So we had all that going on, and the weather was great. The weather was, other than being windy, there wasn't any rain to deal with, to speak of. We have so much going on in the news. It is between what's happening with Israel. We have the hostages that initially there was this word came out that Israel killed the hostages because they bombed. Because of the bombing, they actually killed their own hostages, and it's. I want to get something very clear here. Let's just back up here. Take a 10,000-foot view of this thing. Something that nobody talks about much, and I don't hear this. I hear it occasionally, but not very often. Is if the hostages were released today, the war would be over. There would be a ceasefire. The war would be done. There would be negotiation. If all the hostages were released. Is it possible that Israel is using the hostage, that they're not putting their focus on getting the hostages, they're putting their focus on being at war until the hostages get back? So it's knowing that Hamas wants this war. They want people rioting in the streets. They want this kind of chaos and support because that's what they want to get rid of Israel. That they're willing to sacrifice their own people. By the way, that's the ice maker in the background there. They're willing to sacrifice their own people to get this, to accomplish their goal. They don't see human life as being precious, if it's a Jewish human life, or if it's an American human life, anything else besides themselves. And this is something we have to understand, that the same people who, if you don't see the critical preciousness of life itself, especially human life, then you're missing something in your head. There's just something that should trigger you when you realize that once. This is where I get into the whole thing with people in my family sometimes with the party that they want to support. And I get it if they're not Christians. I understand if they're not Christians. The ones that I have the issue with is when they're supposedly these Christians, and I don't doubt their faith. But where are you in that faith if you can't see that killing a baby in the womb is not something you can be a part of. It's just that's just too far. How do you get there with all the other issues and even all the other social issues? That's just I understand that it's almost as if they're trying to impose their religion in some ways, because when it comes to collectivism, communism, I've even heard Christians say this, communism looks beautiful on paper. Well, it does. It looks good on paper. The early church was a beautiful thing, and it was a communist situation. They no one called anything their own. Everybody sold all their things or gave all their things to the church. And the church supported them in everything. It was a commune. They lived in a communal situation, a collective situation. However, it was voluntary. Now, some people will say, well, Ananias and Sapphira, it wasn't voluntary for them. No, they lied. Had they not lied, that it would be a different story. But it was not a government. It was church government. Now, I have no problem. If a church wants its members to give everything to the church, and the church is going to take care of them, I've got no problem with that. If you are part of if it's a church that says this, we are the only church and this, we are the only way to salvation, which there are some out there, some rather large, I would say, call them denominations that are like that. You will not be a member of the church, or you'll not, you can't be accept the Eucharist unless you are give everything to the church. It's unless you're a member of the church, whatever. This can happen. You can have tyrannical church government. It's just in small, seductive, kind of innocuous ways, and also in very large, verbose ways as well. It can be very subtle, or it can be very drastic and obvious. In most cases, it's very subtle in most churches, in most denominations, and in most churches. I was a part of a mega church movement for a while. It was more of an association, wasn't a denomination, but it's a well-known association church. We became part of leadership. Now, we were already giving 10% of our income, and which was quite a sizable amount. And so as we were giving this, of course, now in order to become leaders in the church, which we were being kind of groomed into being leaders in the church, and then also I ended up on staff at that church for a little short period of time, they looked into your finances. They looked at your giving to see how much you were giving, whether it added up to your income and your 10%. And you couldn't be in leadership if you weren't giving that. And I've got no problem with that either, because again, it's voluntary. If that's what you want to require, that's fine. Now some people don't give 10% to their local church. They give 10% to, they give 5% to their local church and 5% to other ministries or whatever they want to do, or maybe 20% to their. That's kind of between you and God on that whole thing. But a tithe means a tenth. That's what it means. When you give a tenth. It's the same, like you can substitute that word for tithe, because tithe literally means tenth, and it's tenth of your increase. Now, should you make, are there tithing deductions? There was a comedy group a long time ago, back when cassette tapes were out there, and they used to have this interesting little. They had this one little thing. I think it was H&R tithing deduct. It was something about tithing deductions. we can get you tithing deductions for this and that. You know, if you do this, you buy pizza for the youth group. You know, take that off as a tithing deduction. Just all kinds of tithing deductions, so you don't have to give. You don't have to pay as much in your tithe, and you can do all these other things. It was a kind of a tongue in cheek satire thing, and it was very in your face. Just good, and I think a lot of their comedy. What was fun about it was it hit home because a lot of it was true. A lot of it was actually what people would do. And you know, I have to say, I probably do some of that to some degree. However, I have a specific account, and I throw all of that. I have a couple different giving accounts, and I put certain percentages into those giving accounts, and I know those giving accounts are now set aside for giving. I'm not going to get into it too deeply, but it has changed my life with regard to giving, because now I know that money's already given away, and I have money set aside to just, it's kind of like random giving money, and I can just, it's already not mine, I'm just managing it at that point, so I'm just managing that those funds. It's already kind of given, which is... kind of right off the top, which is kind of a very stressless way to do it. You don't feel like you're dipping into your funds to give somebody something. I've already given it away. It's just a matter of where it's going now at this point. And so I'll even buy things out of that account, knowing that I'm going to give those things away. It's like I just kind of say led by the Spirit or whatever. I'll see a good deal on something. I say, oh, you know, a church could use that. I know I do a lot with worship teams and. So I've purchased some equipment occasionally, and I'll actually purchase it with that account with the full intent of knowing that at some point I'm going to run across a small church or worship team that needs that, and I'm just going to go over there. If they invite me to help them or whatever, I'm going to go over there, and I'm just going to I'm going to leave it there. It's just going to be a little blessing bomb for them, just to say, hey, here's a sound system. You can just keep it, kind of thing. I've done that for years, and it is an awesome blessing to see, to just experience that and be a part of that whole thing. Anyway, the onward and upward. Let's talk about some other things. This whole thing about the hostages. Joe Biden is out to lunch, or out to the beach, out to lunch, whatever you want to say he's doing. He's not connected to anything that's going on. He just recently made his little speech. It was the most incoherent thing. He's out there. What are you saying? And I think I know what he's trying to say. What's sad about that is that I have to read around the lines here with what he's actually. There's no transcript for this, other than you know he had a written speech. I'm sure, so they're going to put that out as a transcript. That's not what he said. But that's what the transcript's going to say, he said. Then you have Kamala Harris. And everybody's making a big deal about this thing where she's code-shifting in this. Oh, I was going to play the audio, and I might play it later this week. If I have a show tomorrow morning, actually, I might have time to do a show. Possibly. I've got a big deal tomorrow. It's a quality control thing tomorrow I got to do. And it's going to take up most of my day. A little bit of traveling. Let's go to Minneapolis, Minnesota, and it might be a big day tomorrow. Tomorrow might be hard to do, but I want to try to put some things in the can for tomorrow. And what I might do is have a show tomorrow afternoon. It's possible that I'll have a show on Friday morning, and if I'm able to do that, I might try to put together some audio clips for y'all to listen to. If y'all listen to. It's just the thing about what she did, and this is, you know, she did this, she's got the same speech. She has this one speech that she has written. This whole thing is political theater, and this is, and I've mentioned this before, this is what we're witnessing in real time now, is this political theater thing that's going on in the election cycle. Now, in my opinion, I think where the polls are really off right now. And I've always said, you know, the polls take about a week or so to really kind of catch up with what's happening in the political cycle. And this is why things tighten up in the very end. You'll see, And they have to keep, there are people on Sky News Australia. Sky News Australia, I keep hearing these commentators saying that, you know, Kamala's ahead in the polls. She's gonna win this thing. She's, you know, this is possible. They don't understand American politics, apparently, which surprises me because they've been around a while. But they I don't know who they're listening to. Trump is. They're not looking at swing states. They're looking at the national, you know, popular vote thing, whole thing. Now, Trump. We'll get back into that in a little bit if I think about it, but. Trump is actually in swing states. He always outperforms in the vote. So he's in the last two. Republicans always do this. They always outperform the polls. The polls might say that, you know, in a swing state that the Democrat is up, you know, 1 or 2%, and it never fails that the. The actual numbers. On election day, turn out to be, you know, 2 to 3% the other direction. Trump is even more so in that respect. Polling is a tricky thing because if somebody calls you or wants you to take a poll and ask, hey, who are you going to vote for? There's a lot of people who are reluctant to say they're going to vote for Trump. Now, it's becoming more and more predominant. Especially among people of color in this country, the minorities in this country, if you want to call them that. I see people. I don't see whatever group you're part of. They're becoming much more bold. You go out on the street. This is obvious when you're going out on the street, and they'll say Trump or Kamala, and people will say Trump. That didn't used to happen, and it is happening. Much more now than it used to. In fact, I would say that with the gains that are being made, now this debate is going to be very important, I think, because the last debate where Biden and Trump were together, I had people calling me, asking me what I thought about the debate. And some of them said they really felt like Trump was being a bully. He was being mean. He didn't want to vote for either one of these guys. One of my best friends, he said, "I don't want to vote for either one of these guys." Now, I get that. I understand. I totally understand it. However, there are certain principles and policies. I have to boil it down to that. I can't get around that. And everybody, and I think we have to stop using the communist word, because everybody's saying, oh, Kamala's a communist, she's a communist, she's a Marxist, now she is a Marxist, she has more, I would say, more Marxist ideology, if you want to narrow it down to that. Her and her group, her people, the leftists, the radical leftists in this country, I think are more in tune with the Marxist theory. But there is... I think something very, very important here is that the word collectivist is more important that we really put into place. Most people have not heard that term. And again, this is where the Republican Party needs to be educating people on the differences between individual rights and the foundation of our country being based on individual rights and not collectivism. Collectivism is... when it starts to interfere with rights, well, you have special rights now because you're a part of this collective group. That is very dangerous, extremely dangerous. And you're going down a slope where you're saying some people have more rights than others. And this idea of equity is the whole thing. It undermines the idea of individual rights. You've worked for what you have. Well, but you didn't start at the same place as somebody else. So? Somebody in my family started off very, and surprisingly, believe it or not, there were time in my life where I was very low on the status of economics. I was economically, you'd say I was poor. You wouldn't want to, I couldn't afford to buy anybody anything, feed anybody, give, you know, I was a volunteer worker in a ministry that wasn't taking care of me. In fact, I was actually having to pay to be there. And it was, I was working full time, like a, well, I'm not going to say we're like a dog, because I haven't seen dogs work that hard. There are working dogs out there that work very hard. Don't get me wrong, but my dogs don't work that hard. So my dogs are Democrats, apparently. But I still love them. The idea that we are going to take things away from others to give other people who haven't, you know, just, okay, they want us all on the same level, which is, unfortunately, that level is very small, very low. They hate the middle class. They especially hate the upper middle class. You see, there's actually a division within the middle class, and I would say there's not really a middle class. There's a upper middle class and a lower middle class. The lower middle class is borderline poverty level. And the middle class struggles to be even in the lower middle class. The lower middle class is kept down through banking and other things. There's all kinds of ways that they do this. They're able to mechanize this whole thing. And you never will be able to get past. And the thing that does this is inflation. They control this with inflation, interest rates, all kinds of other things. Banking, you know, tries to, they're getting your future. The future you is now paying for something that you're using now. And sometimes some people just feel like they have to do it that way. You have to make those decisions on your own. But it's almost a wicked manipulation of people, you know, kind of shaving off their productivity. And it keeps you down. It keeps you in this position where you can't go from lower middle class to upper middle class. And I would call the upper middle class the working class. You're still working. You're still doing a 9-to-5, you know, answering to someone else. Even if your own business, you're still answering to your customers. You're working for them. Especially in a small business, which would be, you know, anything less than 100 employees, which is, or anything less than, you know, $500,000 a year income. And apparently anything over $400,000 is kind of right at that upper middle class, in my opinion, because of taxes. If you're making $400,000 a year, there are people who are saying, "Oh, you're making almost $500,000 a year. That's, you know, you're in the rich part. I think you're in the 2%." But it is at that point where you have to realize taxes, because you're working, not because you're earning that money on capital gains, and you're not earning that money on dividends and other things that you're taking money from, or that you're living on some kind of, you know, is it Warren Buffett? Says that his secretary pays more money than he does, or pays more taxes than he does. Probably so, because he's got all these tax loopholes. He's flying around on jets that are owned by the corporation, and all the stuff he does, basically from day to day, is just manage the companies, and he's getting a very small salary, if any at all. Probably pays himself less, and that's why he's paying less in taxes. It's all a bunch of game. It's a big game. But I seriously doubt. I don't think he realizes he's saying something that I think he's talking about personal income tax, not talking about corporate taxes and all those other things he's paying. So, in the process of that, you make your $400,000. You're going to pay about $150,000 in taxes. Well, now you've got $250,000. Well, yeah, that's still a lot of money. But start to look at the price of things anymore. In California, depending on where you live, in California, you're talking about a very small amount of money to get by on. You're not doing well. You're trying to build savings. You're trying to build, you know, a retirement fund. You're trying to build all those other things. Let alone if you have medical expenses of any kind. If anything happens to, you know, in those regards, that can start to just sap you very quickly of any kind of funds that you might have. if you're trying to pay for a house, trying to pay for, you know, kids going through college, whatever it is, it is going to be, you know, it's going to take a lot of your funds. You're just not going to, you know, you're at that stage in life. Now, having said all of that, the Democrats, the leftists, the elites in both parties, I shouldn't say Democrats, the establishment out there, especially the bankers, the oligarchs, the people behind the scenes, they hate the upper middle class because the upper middle class threatens them. They see the pie as being only so big, and there's only so much of it, and they want to have more control of it. And if they think if the upper middle class gets too high up there, if we start having too many more millionaires, then they lose some of their power. There was somebody who worked on the campaign trail with, I believe it was Kamala, might have been somebody else, former candidate for the presidency, worked for somebody in office, and said that most of their time was spent calling, especially in election years, all of their time was spent making phone calls begging for money from rich people, trying to get donors to give. And not necessarily to their campaign, but to certain PAC groups where they knew that there was going to be funneling back for the, you know, to try to get money given to such a thing. And so they would get involved with some of these things and tell them, you know, we really need to give the campaign, whatever. So calling all their rich friends. Now, that gives the rich friends, you know, of course, they want something in exchange for that. It is a quid pro quo thing. It always is. You know that those, you know, you donate, you know, a couple million dollars to someone's account, to someone's, you know, on someone's behalf or to their PAC group or whatever they got going on. You know that there's expectations involved in that. Well, you're going to treat me well, aren't you? Kind of thing. You know, I'm going to get my way when it comes to legislation. I ask you for a favor. You're going to be nice to me, or, you know, you're not going to get any campaign funds ever again. A lot of dirty stuff going on behind the scenes, and a lot of it becomes nasty where a person gives to their campaign and that person decides to retire. Well, what happened to my money there? Or they go through office, they expect some things, and that person decides that's the last year, that's the last term they're going to serve, and they don't really care about about those people who gave them money. This is the kind of thing that happens all the time. It goes back and forth. And then there's those who just want to, you know, control their little constituents all the time, and it's just... By the way, in my cup, I haven't even talked about my cup yet. I'm sorry. Everybody's probably so distracted they haven't heard a thing I've said because they're just concerned about what's in my cup this morning. I almost didn't have a cup. I do not have any chai because I'm on the boat. I do not have any chai this morning. What I do have is some of the best tea in the world. Now there's a slight dash. Well, what makes it good actually? I was coming back from Chicago yesterday, and I stopped off at a Chick-fil-A and got myself a sweet tea. So the ice was left over from that sweet tea, and I had it in my cup here, and I kept it in my little refrigerator that I've got on the boat here. And I actually have a big cooler. The boat itself has a big ice chest built into it. I put about 100 pounds of ice in there, and it still has probably 70 pounds of ice in there. but I don't use that ice in my drinks, but the ice that was left over from Chick-fil-A, which is part one of the better parts of them, and it's one of the other best things that they do there, is the ice machine. The way it makes ice is really quite it's good ice. It's not small chunks, little small chips, kind of like it's not big ice cubes. It's just kind of this. It's not quite crushed ice, but it's not ice cubes. It's just little bitty cubes. So we have these. I had that ice left over, had it in my cup, and then I poured my own homemade sweet tea with real peaches in the bottle. Poured that into my cup this morning, and that's what I'm drinking this morning. I've already had my Wheaties and had my vitamins and all that stuff. I'll probably go for a walk here in a little bit, but regardless of all that, that's what I've got in my cup. So that's the whole tax structure. The whole issue with collectivism is that they want to take away from you those things that you've worked for
You work hard. You achieve an education. Oh, well, we can't get an education because it's hard for us to get in. Because, no, it's not. Show me where there's that kind of discrimination in this country, and I'll tell you it's less than 1% of the population that experiences that at all. In terms of minority groups, there's very few people are turned down. Now, I know of more people in my lifetime. I've known more people who've been turned down for jobs and educational opportunities because they were European white people. I've seen that more in my lifetime than anything else I've seen. I don't know. That's maybe I'm just blind to it. I don't know. But I've seen people of color, people, minorities, the collective groups, receive education that they didn't pay for and been accepted in programs and had job opportunities, gotten job offers from companies that wouldn't even talk to me, even though I was more experienced. They wouldn't even, my application would have been rejected on its face. So I'm not sure that this, this whole idea of white privilege and some of the other things that are out there, this equity idea, it's in the hands of a good, if we had a king who was a good king, who understood everything and had wise, the wisdom of all ages, and was kind-hearted, that, I'm talking about, Jesus himself, I would trust with this kind of thing. I do not trust man and man's government, the manipulative power mongers of our age. I do not trust them at all. They are not, unbiased in their opinions about certain things. So, what I would like to say is, it's all bunk. So many of the policies that whatever she is promoting. Now, I'm getting a little concerned about all the giveaway stuff right now. $6,000 child credit, no tax on tips, $25,000 for a house, which is all it's going to do is create more of a housing industry problem. It's not that people can't afford a house. The problem is there's not enough houses, so the prices go up. They're just the economics of this whole thing. I'm not an economist. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an anesthesiologist. I can't even spell anesthesiology. I'm not a financial counselor. I'm not an economic expert, but I can add, I know that 2 + 2 = 2 is, I know that 2 + 2 = 4. It's not 5. I'm never going to admit that it's 5. I'm never going to say it. They'll have to kill me. The, this idea that now Trump is coming out, of course, now, and also saying, we're going to federally mandate or make sure that insurance companies pay for in vitro. Now, the reason he's doing this, it's a brilliant move, actually. I don't like it. I don't like this kind of competition on who's going to give away the most stuff. Because you're giving away my tax dollars. Who's paying for all this? No, this is the same thing as college loan. By the way, has everybody's college debt been forgiven? Because they promised to do that. College debt forgiveness. Now, I know that they did a rather large chunk, and of course, it turned out not to be as much as it was, and that kind of went away. Everybody forgot about that. All kinds of promises that were made on the campaign trail, and of course, now when presidential candidates make all these promises about financial stuff, a lot of the stuff they don't have control of. It goes to Congress. This is where Trump got in trouble the first time. Was going to build the wall. We're going to build a wall. We're going to build a wall. We're going to build a wall. Got into office. And all the rhinos, all the people who were against him, the people who ended up retiring because they didn't want to be a part of this. Oh, I don't want to be a part of this. I'm going to retire. Voted against it. They would not vote the wall, any funding for the wall. This is why I blame the Republicans just as much, the establishment Republicans just as much as the Democrats, for what's happening across our border right now. Now, speaking of the border, the border bill that Kamala talks about, and she talked about this in her little interview. Now, I don't think I've talked about the interview that happened. I guess it happened on Thursday night. It was Thursday or Friday night, whatever it was. I think it happened Thursday night, last week. Kamala, talked about this border bill and said that Trump, behind the scenes, told all of his candidates that are all of his constituents in Congress to vote it down because if they voted in this border bill, that it would control the border, and then it was a big thing he was running on was this border security thing, and if they fixed the border, then that would be a problem for him. The border under Trump was not a problem, and their legislation wasn't. The only thing that happened was Joe Biden came in and reversed it all. You guys are responsible for this. You actually did this. Trump had workarounds of all kinds to keep people from just pouring across the border. These things that she's saying, all of the points that she makes, the thing about fentanyl, the thing about border crossing, the biggest problem where border crossings happen is at points of entry. All this other stuff. It's all, again, theater. Think of it in terms of theater. It is all phony baloney, made up mishmash, very carefully crafted talk. Because this is not what was happening. They're responsible for this border mess. And now it's getting to the point where they're just right here in my community. It was just about a county over, I guess, from where I live. There was a girl got stabbed with a machete. This guy tried to take a purse, approached this lady with his machete, tried to take her purse, and she resisted. He smacked her hand or her arm with this machete. She still kept the purse. Her mother got involved, or her mother or her daughter got involved, whatever happened with it. I think the mother got involved. He tried to stab the mother. Then he ran off, and I guess this was at a ball game, like a baseball game of some kind. And in the process, about eight or nine men, I guess from this group, fathers, took off after this guy. Chased him down, chased him off the field anyway, chased after him. Nobody could, they lost track of him. And they ended up, the police went looking for him. Within 24 hours, they found the guy. Come to find out, yes, he was an immigrant who got kicked out of the country, I think back about 10 years ago, or five to 10 years ago. Got back in somehow. Nobody knew he was here. And of course, he's desperate, trying to do whatever he had to do to survive. Only thing he knows is to do to survive. And sure enough, there he is. He's at that point where he's out attacking people. Shouldn't be here. He's not assimilated into our country. He's not, not documented. There's nothing. It's just, if they want to come here and work, it's one thing. They can get a work visa. We've had work visas for years. If that's who they want to pick their crops, this underclass that the leftists keep telling us, who's going to pick your crops? So you still want somebody to pick your cotton. You're still looking for slaves to pick your cotton. That's what you're looking for. Still worried about your plantation there, aren't you? That's what it amounts to. We want people to come here legally, in line, orderly, get a job, be a part of productive society, and experience the blessings of what it's like to be in a country built on individuality, not on some kind of collective rights mumbo jumbo. Folks, I've got to go. It is 7:39 now, September 4th, 2024, Wednesday. We're going to close the show. Folks, thank you for listening. Thank you for caring about our country, caring about our nation. Continue to pray for our leaders. We will continue to move forward. I think there's some very big things coming at us
in the future.
God bless. Have a great day.